This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We report only the real, the semi-real,
and the verifiably unreal.
Good morning, Night Vale.
Hello, everybody. I'm Symphony Sanders, your cute baby friend.
I'm Hal Loveland, and I'm a three-nager.
I'm Meg Bashbender, and I'm an adult. Welcome to Good Morning Night Vale. This is our show where we listen to old episodes of Welcome to Night Vale, and we talk about them. And that's what we do. We try to sound smart, we try to sound interesting, and we try to try.
Because we're journalists.
That's all we can do for you. Just try our best. Try our best to be amateur journalists talking to you about this show that we love. And today we're talking about episode number 23, Eternal Scouts.
Yes. Two Night Vale Boy Scouts become the first ever to achieve the rank of Eternal Scout. Plus, an update on the floating cat, changes in who gets to die, and a recruitment drive for a vague yet menacing government agency. Ladies, we are here, episode 23. I enjoyed this episode a great deal. What are your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. I was super excited to get to venture back into the world of the Scouts and to see really, because we had talked about this before, like, what does being an Eternal Scout exactly mean? And I think we kind of found out, yeah?
We did. We've learned the hard way.
Yes.
What being an Eternal Scout means. Yeah. The conversation of that we had about the Scouts early on was something that we got emailed about quite a bit. People were telling us about all the different ways you can be a Scout. So I'm happy that we're at this episode finally, so we can talk more about that.
It occurs to me that nothing in Night Vale, there's nothing in Night Vale that doesn't come without a price.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing good can happen without something terrible happening, and nothing bad can happen without something terrible happening.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've been watching a lot of this show called Once, and it's basically about, and there's like a lot of magic in it. I mean, this is a trope in a lot of things that have to do with the surreal, supernatural, and magical that comes with a price. So This sort of magical world, of course, is going to come with a price, and oh, do they pay it? I kind of like that they're entombed, though, in the glass coffins, similar to Snow White. It made me think of that.
Yes.
Yeah, it made me think of that. But I want to go back to the beginning of this episode because I'm so excited about hearing about Kaushik again.
Yeah, it's great that we finally get to check back in with Kaushik, and Kaushik has kittens.
Oh my gosh, how cute.
Mm-hmm.
It's so exciting. Kaushik has kittens, and there's the part where they're talking about it's a he-cat, and he has kittens, and I'm like, yeah Night Vale, you're 2013 woke. Way to go.
Not only that, but it's that statement on like the selective pedantry that we all have. We all have it for something. Like when I was a kid or younger, I went to see the movie Hard Target with Jean-Claude Van Damme, directed by John Woo. In the theaters, my dad and I are sitting there, and these two guys in front of us are silent throughout the whole film, in which Jean-Claude Van Damme at one point rides a motorcycle by standing on the seat while firing a gun. They say nothing. He goes back to his family farm and gets his shotgun from when he was in the army or whatever he was in that movie, and he pulls it out of a box it's been in for a very long time, and it's completely clean. And one of the guys in front of us goes, yeah, like the gun would be clean. Like that is the thing of everything that they just can't believe. And they have to point out like, that idea of somebody in Night Vale going, but a male cat wouldn't have babies while all of this other weird stuff is going on. It's just
and you just accept it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's a comment on the limits to our suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, those suspenders of disbelief, they get a little too tight. Eventually they just pop, one pops off, and then the next one pops off, and then the pants, the disbelief pants fall down.
And then you're just embarrassed.
That's yeah, right.
And then you're just Winnie the Pooh in it, and everyone knows. Everyone knows. Yeah. This episode had a jarring cold open, which is very, I was like, oh, I want to throw up with this fake news with the cold open.
Yeah.
Like, we report the news. It's true, whether it's not true, or even if it's really, really not true. I was just like, I want to puke. I want to vomit. 2013 Night Vale.
Sometimes content is a victim of the time in which it is consumed. Like, you know, this was written a long time ago, but now that stuff sits a lot differently.
Back when news was news.
Yeah. there's a terrible thing about people disbelieving everything that's happening. I mean, or things that are true. It's hitting too hard close to home right now. And I never thought we would be in this place exactly. So I imagine that reading, like when we read these words again, we're like, oh, if they only knew back then what we know now.
Yes.
Silly past people.
How could you?
We were just sweet summer children, you know?
We were sweet summer children. We were floating around. We were floating around in early Obama's second term.
Yeah, everything seemed possible.
We were much like Kashuk, floating in the bathroom.
Hey-o.
Yeah. I like that Cecil has to ask station management if he can keep the kittens. Because he's like, it's the last station management. It's like kind of this adorable little ask. And of course, station management is horrifying. And we still don't know what it means. But
and I like would they have even found out if he didn't say anything? Because do they have to go to the bathroom? Like, why would they go in there?
To smoke cigarettes.
Yeah. So they go to smoke cigarettes and, you know, cut up their clothing to look cool. But I think also
they smoke it in the boys' room.
It's not a question of whether they use it. It's a question of whether they can control it. And if they can control it, then they will control it.
Yeah. They want to control those kittens.
Speaking of political stuff that probably sat better than it does now. The whole part about not being able to die without government,
like
the
welfare argument,
yeah, the idea of a meritocracy, which is brilliantly—it's so brilliantly written. I love sort of allegorical arguments like this. I think it's written really well, but it does feel—it's a lot less. It was a luxury in 2013 that now feels like we're in the fight of our lives. This is real. They've taken over.
It's true. Yeah, just like even some of the language that I thought was like, if everyone gets to die, then no one really values death. You know what I mean? And like when he said he used to be young and idealistic and think death was a human right. And just like things like that we see now, at least us three, because we are of similar minds on things like healthcare, mm-hmm. and, you know, human rights and being able to live our lives free and not have to fear for our lives every second of every fucking day, that we should have these just inalienable rights. And it's already turned on its head in Night Vale, and they're just like, nah, we don't need to have all that. It should be merit-based as opposed to you just get to die. Ugh, bums me out.
Bums me out that Cecil takes a hard conservative position, too. Cecil is, yeah.
But he's always kind of drawn that line on being on the side of the government, right? I mean, a lot of the times he's like, well, city council said, so we should follow those rules.
Yeah, he makes that early endorsement of Hiram McDaniels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Cecil would be for Trump, though.
I just think Cecil is a hardline. He comes off. The character comes off as like a hardline conservative.
Yeah. Very conservative position.
Yeah. And there are certainly different shades of it's shades of gray. I get it. It's not a question of whether he would support Trump. I don't think that they vote in general elections. I think everything's just local and that they are Truman showed off.
Yeah, exactly.
From everything else. Like, how could there be a higher power than the vague yet menacing government agency or the sheriff's secret police or the city council? Like, there cannot be a higher power structure than them, or else they would be they would have already taken it over, right?
Yeah, what congressional district is Night Vale in?
666th.
Yeah, right.
Well, you're right. So maybe because they aren't connected to the higher government, really? Because when they asked for relief from the government, from the state, and nobody would come to help them. So, like, the government above that, the U.S. government, wouldn't help them probably either. So because they, like, don't exist. So then maybe they don't think about it like that. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
They don't think of the national impact. They're just, like, always local, thinking local, buying local.
Right.
Shop local.
Yeah. It is so hard to leave. So it's like, do you need to have passion about what happens in America, the big picture, if you can never get outside of the small picture, you know?
Well, yes, yes, yes. You wouldn't. That also makes me think of the people wanting to go see the Frankie and Barty get their Eternal Scout thing, that you have to tell people that you're not coming back and don't go looking for you. And then there's another thing about the joining a menacing government agency too, right?
Yeah, the job interview for the menacing government agency, which sounds a lot like how you audition for the neo-futurists. It really does. It's like, we're going to break you down and we're going to, you know, take you to this vulnerable place. And then if you do get hired, you're going to vanish. And it's so true. It really is. The audition process for the neo-futurists is like, it's very grueling and it's long, and there's an initial call and there's a callback that's like 2 days long where you're in a room with the entire ensemble and everyone you're auditioning with for like 5 hours a day.
And whoa.
You have to like really show up and do crazy stuff and like be your biggest and vulnerablest and realest. And then if you get cast, your whole life changes and you get sucked into okay, so maybe the neo-futurists are the vague menacing government agency.
Are you learning a terrible truth right now on this podcast?
Yeah. I mean, for a while, like when I first joined, I was like, I could see why people would call this a cult. And then like a couple more years in, I was like, oh, I'm in a cult. And then it was like, oh, I'm a cult leader. And then it was like, oh, I gotta go.
And then you went to the Yellow Deli.
And then I went to the Yellow Deli, and I was like, this bread is nice.
Did they let you upstairs? That's how you know you're really in. When you get up that little locked door right next to it, right next to the entrance to it, it's got like a lot of locks and like a ring doorbell. Like, it's a whole thing.
When I first went to the Yellow Deli, I went to the one in the Blue Mountains of Australia, and I was like, this person who's serving me is here against her will. But yes, I'll have a smoothie.
Can we talk about those weird children?
The ones at Pamela Winchell's press conference?
What's with the vibrating? People keep vibrating.
It's kind of a theme, right? The good vibrations, bad vibrations, general vibrations.
Yeah, good vibration. Come on, come on, come on. I always imagine those children to be hollow-eyed and like, their mouths are just like open, you know, like in horror movies where they're like.
Yeah. Black liquid, like a thick black liquid is pouring out of them at all times.
Yeah. Yeah.
The balloons coming out of Pamela Winchell's mouth, I imagine to be like old used up balloons that are just pouring out like in a horror film when a monster like bugs just start pouring, like all these balloons just start pouring out and the kids are like. They have their hands up and out and cupped, and they're taking some of these old, wrinkly, used-ass balloons. Like when a dog eats balloons and then craps a bunch of balloons out, like it's that, but out of her mouth.
That's gross, but sure. I was imagining them as they come out, they inflate.
Oh, that's much more friendly.
No, but like she like keeps pulling them out and then handing them to the children, like – I think that's just as upsetting.
She's a very avant-garde mayor.
She's always doing an art piece, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I kind of like that. We get the PTA back again. Mm-hmm. And the glow cloud. I always like when the glow cloud comes in. I did make a note about the Vega menacing agencies. I hate to go back to this, but I was just looking through my notes. And it said, how to get in, desert your family.
Yeah, that's how you become a neo-futurist.
talking about the PTA for a second, going back to that.
Yeah.
Did you guys have soda machines in your schools?
Yeah, we had a vending machine, but like, I don't know. I never really dealt with it.
Yeah, we had soda machines.
Was it a big deal? We did too. We had one soda machine and one vending machine. And I feel like there was controversy around it. And it is like the least controversial thing on earth to have a vending machine and a soda. It's not like they had like pornos and Jack Daniels in either of the machines. It was like a regular Coca-Cola machine, and then do you want some Andy Cap cheddar fries?
I think that concern is like based around like having too much sugar for your kids, or like having them eating junk food instead of real food. And I'm like, why don't you just make sure that your kid is eating real food though, too? Like them having like one snack isn't gonna kill them, but I mean, that also comes from me. I was never a big soda drinker, so doesn't really affect me.
I think this was during the like big soda ban where they were in New York City when they started to ban like the gigantic biggest gulp beverages, because they're like, you can't. Yeah. No person should have that in one serving. So like no like single serve like gallon of soda.
When it's just a tub of soda. It looks like a bucket of chicken, but it's but it's soda.
I used to get that Diet Coke from On the Run, that like from the fountain machine, and it was like the 64 ounces. And like 64 ounces of Diet Coke, like no one should drink that. Like,
what's the maximum amount somebody should drink in ounces?
Like the one can, like, you know, once a year. Like,
but people drink those, like the bottles. Like, I know people that drink two or three of those a day.
Oh, my dad used to do – he would get – I think it was just regular Diet Coke, pretty sure. He would bring, like, a six-pack in the car, and then he would drink it. He would drink so much Diet Coke, like, so much Diet Coke, and he was losing weight at the time.
He would have a six-pack of soda in the car?
Oh, he would – I don't know. It was just, like – the backseat of the car, because he would drink it and then like throw the bottle, like he would, you know, close the bottle, throw it behind like a friggin' bachelor. And then you get in the car and be like, Dad, what's going on? There are so many empty bottles back here. And then you had to like get the bottles into a bag. And then there's a trash can in the garage that's just for the bottles of Coke. Now it's water.
What?
Now he's drinking a lot more water. But he was like, he got into like – he would fixate on something. Like it would be Diet Coke, and then at one point eating carrots was like the thing. So he ate so many carrots that he got jaundiced.
No.
He put so much carrot. He started to turn orange.
He was like – he had a bad spray tan just from eating he would get a giant bag of baby carrots and like Bugs Bunny the thing. He'd just be like – like over and over and probably drink Diet Coke to wash it down.
Oh wow.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
I don't wanna think about what kind of poops that makes. But now I am.
Yeah.
Well, if this will help you get your mind off of that, I met a dog who was a corgi recently who would let you balance. He loves carrots, baby carrots. And you could balance it on his nose, like on his nose, and he would hold it there until you said, okay. And then go get it. And then he would drop it and then eat it. He loved carrots. I'll send you the video.
Isn't that like great. A dog is like a crackhead where it's like, I'll do whatever you want as long as I can have the carrot. You can do whatever you want to me. You can put the carrot on my nose and I'll wait.
But I don't
I'll be
feel
so
bad.
Good.
Like the dog's going to like it and it's healthy. The of dog's course. Not going to get jaundice.
The corgi starts to turn orange.
Like more orange?
Yeah.
And that's adorable. See, it's cuter when furry animals turn orange. Not so cute when like a white guy starts to turn orange.
Yeah, that is definitely not cute. Oh, but can we talk about, I guess, a white guy? Earl Harlan?
Oh, yeah. Here we go. Earl Harlan, so, welcome to the party. Yeah.
What are we? There was like a little like minor like romance, like wistful, like used to be, like not used to be, but like they could have been something.
Yeah.
And I kind of like it. But then I was thinking about Carlos and then I was like, they're not really anything yet. So what difference does it make? And Cecil didn't seem like that interested. Although at the end he does say that he thinks about it often. But, like, he thinks about a lot of things often.
What might have been, you know?
But yeah. I think about that sometimes, like, if you have dated someone a while ago and you're like, what if? And then I quickly think of something else.
Yeah, or, like, it kind of, the vibe I kind of get is that maybe this is just, like, my bias of knowing how into Carlos Cecil is. But, like, you kind of get the vibe that maybe Earl was a little bit more into Cecil than Cecil was into Earl.
Totally.
Yes. Yeah,
so Cecil, it's like we could have had something really wonderful, and Cecil's like, yeah, or we could be friends.
Yeah, Cecil's the one who got away for Earl, and Earl is whatever he is to Cecil, but it's not like.
I think it's like, a little bit more like it. He maybe piqued his interest at one point, right. But not enough. Not like Carlos did. Not like because the way he talks about Carlos, like. He's barely a mention. Earl Harlan is barely a mention, like besides like a couple of paragraphs in this episode. But he talks. He'll go on at length about Carlos. That's where that's true love, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, Earl wants back. Cecil got that boomerang.
He got that boom, boom, boom.
I want to talk briefly about the word from our sponsors.
Oh, yes.
In that this ad works as a joke ad, but could be about a real Six Flags because the one out here, for a stretch of time, it felt like every single night they're like, the Superman ride breaks down, a car dangling on the precipice of danger. Like everything in that park was breaking and there was an accident or somebody died every single day. So it's like Six Flags.
Damn.
Get a wrench and fix your business.
You know, I used to work at Six Flags, right?
Yeah. No. It was very desperate and hopeless. And were people dying all the time?
People were not dying all the time. I remember rides would shut down and people get stressed out. But I was one of the people at the beginning who had a camera and was like, hi, could you stop for a couple quick pictures? The ones like everyone hates and wants to run away from quickly. But I was so chipper. People liked it. This one guy told me that the CIA was looking for him. That's why I couldn't take his picture. And I was like, so why are you at Great America then? Like, why are you at Six Flags? There's cameras everywhere.
He was the Zodiac killer.
Ted Cruz?
Who's Ted Cruz? His dad?
But I love Six Flags. Have you guys been? Well, how have you gone to that one?
I am scared because of how many rides are breaking. I did go to Disneyland yesterday, and that was enough excitement for me.
You went to Disney yesterday?
I did. Jennifer and I went.
I'm so jealous.
Oh, my God.
And we went on Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout, where the Tower of Terror once stood. And okay. We really enjoyed it. Instead of just being terrified, I laughed the whole time. And then Jennifer was enjoying my laughing at it.
You don't like scary stuff, right, Hal?
I don't like to be – the Tower of Terror, my problem was like the whole premise of the ride is you're on an elevator where people died.
Oh, I've been to the one in Disney World. Friend, or MGM, Universal, whatever the place is.
Same concept here. But every time I get on an elevator, and I'm not scared of elevators. I will get on any end of elevator anytime, anywhere. But there's always a part in the back of my head that's like – is this going to be the time the cable snaps and I fall to my death?
And it crashes down to the bottom. Yeah.
Which is the whole concept of the Tower of Terror is like, this elevator is where everybody died. And now you will, dumbass, have fun, bitch. And then boom, you're dropping and shooting up in the air. The ghost's trying to take your life. Not today, Satan.
Not today, Satan. I actually have been on an elevator that dropped 6 floors. But I didn't die.
Did you jump?
I did not jump.
I've heard you can just jump when it's about to hit the ground and you're fine.
And you'll be fine. And you'll just land on the rest of the bodies in the elevator.
Yeah.
I used to work for those of you who don't know, I used to work for a fraternity years and years ago, the headquarters. And we had an event where there were lots of undergraduates. And undergraduates think it's funny to pile into elevators to see how many people can fit. And I was at the back. And since I'm a small person, people just squished in. And the last thing I saw was the elevator still halfway open and we just dropped. And then it caught the emergency thingy caught us. But we were like halfway in between a floor, like the second and third floor at that point. So that was fun.
I'm happy you made it out.
Thank you. Me too. Oh, no, I'm a ghost.
You buried the lead here, though. You worked at a fraternity?
Oh, yeah. First, like, 6 years.
Well, I have a lot of questions about this, but
we're going to have to talk about that off show because those secrets I was sworn to keep.
I'm going to save it for off air.
But let's go back to one thing that I thought was really interesting was the community health tips. And okay, so I get they're like, there's too much blood, you know, stop bleeding at home, like finish bleeding at home.
Yes.
But the thing that got me the most in that whole part was the copper magnetic bracelets.
It's so specific.
Them shits are not, they don't even work.
You tell that to people who spent their life savings buying them.
Wait, what?
I don't know. They were very popular for a while. People were super into them. People thought they could cure cancer.
But people didn't spend their life savings on it, did they?
I don't know. $49.99 might be someone's life savings.
That's mine.
My favorite visual so far in this show is is Suzanne Thurgood lighting a cigarette and placing it expertly into the mouth of a low-flying hawk.
Like, it just flies by and it's like, and like she sticks a cigarette. I literally just wrote what and triple underlined it. And then a distant clock tower chimed at the quarter hour and a gentle rain began to fall.
It's a John Woo movie.
I was like so cinematic.
Yeah. This whole bit is hilarious. The part, the beginning, they can't, the Nightville Medical Board announced that they can't help you. Not if you're going to keep screaming like that.
I love it. I love it. And then so after the weather happens, and we'll get to that in a moment, listeners. But after the weather happens, Cecil comes back on and is like, oh, you know, everything's over. The kids are gone. Like, it wasn't as bad as we thought it was going to be. They only, like, you know, attacked what people savagely and dread. And, like, they killed, like, 10 people. Like, totally fine. And I was like, what? What? How can you just be like, that's okay? Because it's not.
He downplays it. It's part of the propaganda machine that he fuels.
No, I almost think that he just expects there to be more carnage. Right?
Yeah.
Just like in general.
Their expected losses on any given day have to be incredibly high.
Yeah. I mean, with just like, see, because even like thinking about how they treat the interns' deaths, like they're not like, oh, we have to stop this from happening or protect them or anything. He's just like, well, they're gone. Next.
Yeah.
Cold-blooded. Cecil Palmer.
Show must go on. He just reads the news, you know. He does the best he can do.
So Frankie and Barty become, they're like placed out in glass and stuff like that. And I don't know if this is Cecil saying how like basically proud he is of these kids, right? Or is that a statement that's being prepared? I think he's saying that like every child would be super proud for this to have this honor, right?
Yeah. Well, it goes back to the beginning where Earl's talking about how he's proud and terrified of what's going to happen.
Right.
He's proud that he's there, the first troop, and that but he's terrified because everything in Night Vale is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's kind of how I feel about Welcome to Night Vale, the organization, not the show. Proud and terrifying.
True. And then the next part really got me on a brain level and a feelings level, that fear is consciousness plus life and regret is an attempt to avoid what has already happened. I was like, oh, that's deep.
Yeah. The past tense of regret is indecision, right?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
I'm super indecisive, mainly when it comes to food, like what I'm going to eat. I'm always nervous I'm going to order the wrong thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Which would be tragic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you get orderer's remorse.
Yeah. Because you only get to eat so many times a day.
Yeah.
You have to knock it out of the park every one of those times.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's showtime.
You got to be like, that was exactly what I wanted. Yeah. Showtime.
Showtime. Get in the zone, for goodness sakes.
Yeah. I love the bits about toast in here. The toast bits, as I like to call them.
toast
is bread held under direct heat until crisp, and then the past tense of toast is toasted. And that's this whole bit is a piece from What the Time Traveler Will Tell Us, a play that Jeffrey and Joseph wrote together at the beginning of their artistic collaboration. That was just kind of lifted whole hog from that script and plopped right into this one.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, there was a lot about toast in that show. It was like one of the images that they used a lot. Because, I mean, toast it's a really cool thing to make on stage because it has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it smells like something. And then afterwards, the audience gets to eat something, which is nice. So toast has like a lot of theatrical power, I think. But yeah, it was an image that they used in their show.
Yeah, there's a lot of visceral sensations when it comes to toast, especially like, you know what toast smells like. Everybody knows what toast smells like. And you know when toast is too done.
Yeah, burnt toast.
How do you like your toast?
Like a medium brown.
Okay. What about you, Holly Howe?
Light to medium. I don't want it burnt.
I also like light to medium because I want it to be like kind of dry and crisp on the outside, but then like still kind of with a soft chewiness to it.
Yeah, I don't want it to cut through from my mouth.
Yeah, that happens to me all the time. I have a very sensitive upper palate.
Yeah, me too. I think that's because I burn it a lot because I eat food before it's cold enough to eat.
It's usually like hot, like melted cheese, like stuck to the roof of my mouth, and I'm like,
but spitting stuff into the sink when I'm cooking. Yeah, happens to me a lot. The thing I find interesting about this section is that it is lifted from another piece of work, but it is the second episode of the past three that kind of ends with a little paragraph about exploring regret and exploring what possibilities of doors being closed and possibilities becoming impossible.
Which we've explored a lot in the last couple of episodes, that sort of sliding doors sort of idea of like what could have been, what might have been, and just reflecting on that. And I don't feel like it's like a look back on those things and like feel those things, feel regret, feel all those things. It's more of a like let that enter your mind and then let it go out again sort of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
More of a yogic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's why it spoke to me so much.
I think it's about like examining regret, maybe not the specifics, of regret, but the concept of regret, and that it does have applications to everyone's individual life, but it also is this other thing that is universal and encompassing throughout history is what might have been.
Yeah.
Up next, we hear from fans and friends of the podcast about their theories, comments, and questions. But first, a conversation about this episode's weather, which is Too Much Time by John Vanderslice, which I think is a great song to go with this episode.
Yeah, I wrote down very 80s in the best way because there's like a lot of synth sort of sounds to it. But it made me think of like The Cure or Depeche Mode or something like. Great song. I love the lyrics. And I like the music. It was very catchy. But it was like really easy listening and like the his voice was just like, I don't know, it reminded me of those bands.
Yeah, I thought that this was appropriate for the episode with Earl, and for the one with the one that does have the paragraph at the end about regret and indecision, because it's like, it's about not being able to find someone because too much time has passed.
Misconnections.
And I think it's, interesting. Yeah, so John Vanderslice is a cool guy. He has, I think, one or two all analog-only recording studios in California. So he records, he has those things. Then he does a lot of music himself, but he also is a producer and produces albums for lots of bands, specifically the of interest to me as a Mountain Goats fan. He's produced a number of Mountain Goats albums, including The Sunset Tree, which is a one that is very popular, one that has a lot of great songs on it.
Yeah, it's a very the song's got a lot of power to it. It's got like a lot of force in a good way. Like musically, it's just like really rich and full.
Yeah. When I was doing my cursory Google of the song and the artist, I found a thing that he wrote about or was interviewed about in The New Yorker about how when he was touring, he had a near-death experience and then was just like, that's it, I'm not doing this anymore, like instantly.
What?
He's like, the story was that he was in a van that almost flipped over, and as soon as everything righted themselves, he was like, I'm not touring anymore. Like, just as soon as like the car straightened out, he's like, I'm not doing this anymore, I'm not going to die in a van. Came off the road.
Wow.
Planning on dying in a van. On tour, so I don't know.
That's what the odds are, right?
You're scheduling.
That's right. If you spend most of your time in a fucking van, then you're probably dying.
Accidents occur within 10 miles of the home, and when your home's a van, you're going to die in a van.
That or in the bathroom during one of my mini tubs, my hot tubs.
Worst place to go. But yeah, thanks, John Vanderslice. I remember when I was originally recording the credits for this, I was like, it's Vanderslice? Vanderslice?
Vanderslice?
Just trying to be funny with Joseph. And so I always think of him as John Vanderslice.
I think that's right. I think he'd approve.
Stay right there. Good Morning, Night Vale will return after a brief break.
Well, that'll bring us to the fan zone.
Get into the fan zone. Bow, bow, bow.
Fan zone.
Fan zone.
Here in the fan zone, Cooper writes, hey, ya, sentient cloud, kick-ass book lover, and underappreciated skullin' lover. Cooper here to give you a little heads up that there might be a few Boy Scouts out there that have been influenced by older scouts who listen to Welcome to Night Vale. When I was living in my hometown after college, I volunteered as an assistant scoutmaster at my local Boy Scout troop and decided to attempt to introduce some Night Vale propaganda into the activities and troop life. With that said, it caught on quickly and grew into something I could not control, as it should. Our troop named one of their patrols the Glow Cloud Patrol and basically worshipped the podcast. Aw, that's so cute. Even though they had no idea what it was at first. Later on, I introduced them on a trip to a campout to the audio, and a few of them fell in love with it. Fast forward 3 or so years later, I'm in Chicago working with another scout troop. Hey, I live in Chicago. The senior patrol leader in the troop was an avid listener, and we had a 5-hour long talk about our love of the podcast and the mythos that has sprung up in its wake. One more personal note. This podcast and the whole Night Vale Presents Network has gotten me through some many archaeological excavations and research papers. Thanks for everything, and I will forever be a faithful listener to the sweet sounds of the strange become normal of Welcome to Night Vale. Sincerely, Cooper Sheldon. Well, Cooper Sheldon, thank you so much. You are a sweet doll face, and we appreciate that. And that you're passing on your love of Night Vale, as we call the mission. to the youth. We don't call it that.
At the Yellow Deli, we call it that. Yeah. The Neo-Futurists, we call it that. Yeah. All the cults I belong to.
I think that's nice.
Cooper, thanks so much. That's great. Yeah. I love the concept that you just like kind of put a bug in the ears of the other scouts, and then they just ran with it before they even knew what it was. But they just like latched on to the weirdness that of you telling them about it, and they ran with that. So next up, we have a voicemail from Christian.
Good morning, Night Vale. My name is Christian. I am calling from California, and I wanted to let you guys know what my Kashyyyk headcanon was. It's actually very similar to Hal's. I also thought that he was a black cat at first, and I also had the image of him being picked up by the midsection, like pretty much exactly. The only difference is the style of the bathroom. I imagine it like it's the bathroom at my office job, where you walk in, there are two urinals to the left and a stall directly ahead, and then two sinks on the right side, and then he just is floating in the corner next to the garbage can. Also, I wanted to confirm that Symphony is correct. Weebelo is a tier of scouting. It's the last tier that I made it to before I stopped going. Anyway, I just wanted to call and thank you guys for making all of your shows and just being fantastic podcasters. Have a good day.
So yeah, thank you so much, Christian. We appreciate you calling in and letting us know about your Kashyyyk headcanon, and that you do agree with Hal. That's great.
And that I'm correct.
And that Symphony is correct. So so all around, thanks for confirming our existence and our biases and for checking in to us on the show. And yeah. And for sharing your headcanons.
Yeah. Jacob writes, hello, Jacob. Not Jacob's name. It's just Jacob, but I like to say it. Jacob. I noticed that the episode on Eternal Scouts is coming up, and I wonder if the reason Eternal Scouts are encased in glass and put on a pedestal is to mirror how those people outside of Night Vale that attain Eagle Scout, the highest non-Night Valian rank, are held to high standards and automatically expected to be the best possible people. Also, with modern scouts beginning to bring in girls as well, do we expect that change to occur in Night Vale? And who will be the first female Eternal Scout? Sincerely, a curious Eagle Scout and middle school science teacher, yours in weirdness. Well, thank you, Jacob. These are all very good questions and a very good point. I would understand that an Eagle Scout is held to a higher standard, especially through everything you have to go through. It's something hard to attain. People will automatically assume some status with it, not only in terms of the rank you've achieved, but in terms of the strength of character that it would involve to hold it. So it's certainly possible. And if that's what you see in it, then it's true. As for girls being brought in to the scouts, I think it only makes sense. Geez, and who would be the first female Eternal Scout? I would assume it would be Tamika Flynn, right?
Me, baby!
Yeah, of course.
Feels like it, yeah. But girls can't be scouts. They'll just cry the whole time and get their period.
Yeah, that's right.
Know.
They should all just
calm
down. Our
stupid small girl brains.
they're just being hysterical. Jacob, thank you for writing in, and thank you for being a teacher. We need more of you.
Yeah, we appreciate that. But yeah, thank you so much for writing in and for thinking about what the implications of girls coming into the scouts in the world and in Night Vale. We appreciate you thinking about that. Yeah, I was a... We didn't have programs like that when I was a youth. There was
no,
girls were not allowed in the Boy Scouts. We had an organization that we did, which was, God damn it, it was called the Indian Princesses.
Yes,
which is so fucked up, but it's what it was called. Now it's called Adventure Princesses. Have we talked about this on the show? Anyway, so now it's called Adventure Princesses, which is still not quite better. At least it's not culturally appropriating at this point.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of rules. There was a lot of us playing, like us being unsupervised around live fire.
What?
And yeah, it was great. It was really great. I still am friends with some of my fellow Indian princesses, and they're all such badass ladies who can like start a fire and like ford a creek and like, yeah, can just, yeah. But we were just feral children out in the woods.
You'll all be very useful on our Oregon Trail.
Yeah. I got some pretty good outdoor skills, I have to say.
Nice.
But you're also very delicate.
Yeah. My body's no good, but I can, like, use it till it breaks in a way that will provide heat and food for us in the woods.
Thank you. Thank you for your sacrifice.
Hey, well, the least I could do, right?
Yes.
Next up, Anthony writes, my other theory is relating to the Scouts. In hearing the new ranks of the Scouts, I instantly thought of vampires. Ooh. Eternal Scout sounds like someone has reached full vampire status, destined to live forever until they get their sunlight badge, which would, of course, demand the ultimate sacrifice. Whoa. Anyway, I thought I would share with you. Love listening to your show, and welcome to Night Vale. Thanks, Anthony, Canberra, Australia. Although
down under.
Oh, I'm really bad. Down under. Nope.
Down under, Anthony. Down under.
So it'd be Canberra.
I'm very interested in what the first theory is that's not in here. Or did Anthony just write at the beginning of it is just, my other theory is, and we're left to wonder, in which case this is a brilliant piece of art that you have sent, Anthony, because my wheels are spinning and turning at an incredible rate as I try to figure out what possibly could the first theory be. Is it related to this other theory? Or, as now, since it says my other theory, is it completely different?
It's like that prank where you get two chickens and you write one and three on them and then you release them into a building and they're always looking for two. They never find two. Anthony wrote a longer email and I edited it to just this part. So there's another part, which I don't remember what it was, but we can go into our Google mailbox and look it up if it really is burning a hole in our minds.
I'm more interested, Symphony, what is your headcanon of what the first theory is?
Oh, of what Anthony's first theory was?
Yeah. What do you think the first theory is?
Oh, that Night Vale is all in Cecil's head.
Okay.
Because that's a theory we get a lot.
Mine is that Snap, Crackle, and Pop from Rice Krispies are in a three-way relationship and have been since they were first launched. I don't think it has anything to do with Night Vale.
Hal, you're right.
Wow.
I just looked back in the Google box and it's that. Yeah, it's about cereal and polyamory.
Yep. I'm pretty good at guessing, guys. Pretty good instincts.
Oh, my God.
Yep. Great. Chrissy writes to us, Kashyyyk is gray and the projection of a cat somewhere else. He does things that don't make sense in the current environment, like batting and playing with a toy that no one in Night Vale can see because the toy is in a world where the cat who projects Kashyyyk actually lives. The kittens are not in the other world. They're truly Night Vale beings, but since they were birthed by a projection, they're not 100% real. That's why they also float. Chrissy, I love this. I love this theory that Kashyyyk is a projected hologram and that is like in two worlds and that the kittens are also in sort of in two worlds. And that's what gives them the floatingness. That's some genius stuff. That's some like you got that good weed and looked at the moon for a bit and and came back a different person with this theory. And I appreciate that.
Look, I'll concede the last two, the part about the projection and like how the kittens are in there, but I can't get with the gray Kashyyyk. That's it. That's all I have to say.
That's where it stops. That's the clean shotgun for you.
Yep.
There's no way that cat is gray.
That's what pops that suspender right off those disbelief pants.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you know, before we go, we all know that Leanne has sent 80 headcanons to us. I have three of them right here, even though they're all numbered number one, which I love. I just want
to. Oh, no. They got messed up. No, I think it's 78, 79, and it's like later in the 70s.
Okay.
Oh.
It's the same. It's in the 70s. Wait, Symphony, your quick headcanon. Where do you think in the 80 these lie?
I think they're spread out. I was going to say one is like under like somewhere in between 1 and 10. The middle one is like 47, and the last one is like 72.
I think the three of them represent Snap, Crackle, and Pop, who we learned before are in a polyamorous relationship. Yeah.
That thruple.
Yeah, they're a thruple.
In your breakfast bowl.
I couldn't think of that word. Okay.
Thruple?
Here are three Kashyyyk headcanons. I'm going to hit you with them real quick. Number one, Kashek is a Hebrew word, choshech, meaning darkness. I believe Kashek is a black cat. Correct. Also, I mean, come on. Of course a spooky, cool black cat is Cecil's. Yeah, duh. Of course. That's not headcanon. That's held canon. Two. Because, and I'm going to keep using Kashek's Hebrew name because I never use my Hebrew name anymore, and it's pretty
which
close
is
to
what?
This. Chanoch.
Whoa.
Yeah. Because Choshech gave birth to a litter of kittens, I believe Cecil can't tell the gender of cats. Also plausible. Mm. We've established that...
Can you tell the gender of cats?
Yes.
I can tell cats a gender.
I've never understood. I can't... I'm not, like, trying to look for a cat penis, but even if I can never tell...
They have marked differences.
They do?
Yes.
Okay.
You can see their little balls and their little wieners.
But you have to, like, you gotta, you you're have not to, gonna just see.
You literally
see that
just have to look
by.
Underneath. It's not really that hard.
Just lift up your cat like you're gonna wheelbarrow them, and you can look and see what's going on.
If you lift them up just like you're gonna spin them around in a circle of love, then, like, if you've never done that to a cat, then you've never loved a cat properly.
You mean grab them by their rear legs and swung them around and thrown them?
No. Grab them underneath their front arms, and so their arms are out and their face is facing your face, and you lift them up, much like Simba.
Okay.
You know, a la The Lion King. Lift them up, and then you turn around in a circle.
Okay.
It's what I do to you every time we see each other.
Okay. Yeah, I thought you were talking about playing ambulance with your cat, which you should not do. Nobody should do that. Do you know what that is?
What's that?
That's when you take a cat by the tail and you swing it around and it goes. You shouldn't do that, is what I'm saying.
That
I'm against
it. Cruel.
Exactly. I didn't think you would do that, but I just needed to make sure.
I am a lover of cats and animals, and I would literally never do that. This is not a everybody listening, this is not a joke.
This is no joke.
I do not condone abuse of animals, and I will stomp on your face if I ever find out that you abused an animal.
That's
right. Not cool.
I agree. I will back you up. I'll help you hide the body. Third Choshech headcanon, Janice Palmer is the parent of Mixtape the Kitten. Sure.
Wow.
I'm here for it.
I'm here for it too.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Leanne.
Yeah. I named Mixtape the Kitten.
You did?
Yeah, well, because...
You do really good names for animals.
Well, that's... With Joseph and I, we were in Italy and in Rome, and there's, like, this old ruin in Rome that you can look into, and it's, like, a big, empty ruin, but it's full of cats. And we were just, like, sitting there and just naming the cats, and I named one of them Mixtape. And Joseph thought that was cute. And then, you know, soon, Mixtape the Kitten was in Night Vale.
Well... I believe it.
Boom.
I think Mixtape's a good name for a cat.
It is.
Yeah.
And I think there should be a cat out there named Mixtape. If you have a cat out there named Mixtape, please send it to us. But until then, thank you guys so much for listening. And next week, we'll be talking about the episode, The Mayor. Good morning, Night Vale. Good morning.
Good Morning Night Vale is a Night Vale Presents production. It is hosted by Symphony Sanders, Hal Lublin, and Meg Bashwinner. It is mixed and edited by Vincent Cascione. It is produced by Meg Bashwinner. Theme music by Disparition. Special thanks to our fans who submitted their thoughts this week. Leave us a voicemail at 929-277-2050 or email us at info@goodmorningnightvale.com. To share your theories and ask questions, or to invite us to your Friendsgiving murder mystery dinner theater. This show is powered by our patrons like Kathy Fink, hi Kathy, Willow Jordan, Shadow Side, Catherine Myers, Richard Young, and Kyla Hernandez. some of whom will be receiving weird boxes in the mail from me very soon. If you are interested in supporting this show in exchange for lots of fun, exclusive, insider, hyper-cool kid content, check us out at patreon.com/goodmorningnightvale. For more information on this show, go to goodmorningnightvale.com and follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at Nightvale Chat. Special thanks to Christy Gressman, Jeffrey Craner, Joseph Fink, and Adam Cecil. Today's adverb is victoriously. She emerged from her office victoriously after recording this week's credits, for she was now free to sit upon her sofa and keep up with those Kardashians.
They say you shouldn't meet your heroes. I'm Joseph Fink, and I'd like to introduce you to I Only Listen to the Mountain Goats, the show where I meet my hero and have conversations about songwriting, art, and life.
This podcast is going to be weird for me because I'm proud of what I do, but I always try to change the subject if people tell me that my stuff is good.
I Only Listen to the Mountain Goats. Find it wherever you listen to podcasts.